Blog Talk Radio.
Play Sports City Chefs from Amazon Music.
Yeah.
Back, listen, enjoy the vibe. Sip something, light it up, enjoy the ride. Cause the Sports City Chefs is on the night. In the kitchen cooking up, they on the rise.
Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs, Chefs. Sports City Chefs,
Yes, Lord, we got a brand new present. Joe Biden, we riding, I pray you heaven sent. Word from the wise, my people stay ahead of me.
Come on,
I've been relevant, trying to survive the elements. It ain't no love in these streets, these dudes telling it. Case go from cold to hot, state evidence. Kaboom, Sports City Chefs is in the room. Cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, blown like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend, it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again.
I done took off this blazer, loosened up the tie, stepped aside, the kitchen timeless is alive. Sports City, good morning. Welcome to the Sunday morning brunch. I'm your host, TP Timeless. Boy, we got a lot of stuff to jump into. Without any further ado, I have my co-host, my brother, the new chef in the building, Sizzling Steve. Welcome to the brunch. How are you feeling this morning?
Tally-ho! Greetings from the West Coast. It is, I think of Nicole Rich, who was used to describe things by saying, that's hot. That's how you would describe Southern California right now. It's hot, it's sizzling, it's smoking, and I am ready to lend some heat while I endure the heat here in the West Coast.
That is one thing about the West Coast in the summer. I don't do well with heat. Anything over 91, I'm bothered. I'm bothered. But the good thing about the West Coast is it's dry heat. Out here, we get the muggy humidity. Your clothes feel like they're 10,000 pounds on your shoulders. So, I mean, I don't like picking the poison. I don't know which one I would like. I actually would probably like the dry heat better, especially, you know, I finally experienced heat in Vegas, but I haven't ran into those 118 days, so that's good, but that's neither here nor there. But stay cool out there because I need you, bro, for real. And we got a lot of stuff to jump into, from the NBA Finals to MLB and how stuff is going down now, and, of course, the fight that took place last night as well, and also something that stunned me yesterday, and I can't believe what happened. But I'll get into this stuff as best as we possibly can. Try to do this as sharp as we can also. We'll probably be having people pour in. The call-in number is 929-477-2759. We got you locked and loaded for the next 90 minutes or more with Sports City. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you are here with the chef. First and foremost, the fight that took place up against Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor. Now, here is something that I know a lot of people don't watch the fight game, even though I am enamored with it. I'm a fight fan. I'm more of a boxing guy than MMA, but knowing that I do have friends and people that are in the fight world, of course, I do watch it to a heavy degree. I can't even say to a certain degree I do watch it. In which this is the trilogy of the fight. Their first fight, Conor McGregor was on cloud 37, fighting everybody and winning those bouts. He beat Dustin Poirier in the first match. The second match they have, Poirier ends up knocking Conor out up against the fence. Now this fight comes around, and I'm going to set the table before I jump into it. The weigh-in is everything, and then I'll come back to it if I say this correctly. They get into the fight. It starts into the first round, and they're trading their, you know, jabs, things of that nature, exchanging kicks. And the one thing about Dustin the second fight against Conor, he was attacking his legs and basically took Conor's legs away from him and literally got into the ground and pounded him out. Conor was ready for it as best as he possibly could, getting his leg out of there. Interesting enough, I'm saying get his leg out of there. the crazy portion of this, he goes into retreat just to back away from him, I guess, to reset, to start throwing his blows, things of that nature. And the more tragic thing that happens in sports, and it's nobody's fault, it could just be the condition of the body or if something along the lines in the body was already a matter that was happening and the person did not know or wasn't aware of, Connor steps back and the bone snaps. And I'm not sure, I want to look into it more if it's more his ankle or foot, but neither way, his foot was not there to support his stance. And he falls to the ground, and Dustin basically tries to finish it, but we all know what happened. It was due to the break of the leg. But at this time, Connor's left ear, where it's cauliflower ear, and more or less when they call it cauliflower ear, it's like blood buildup. I don't know if it's really pus in there. I think it's just blood. And that splattered all over Connor's face. So, you know, a lot of fighters or boxers lose, you know, stability when that happens. He's on the ground. He's trying to get the pound out, and the ref stops it. But due to the nature of the break, and more or less Connor really can't defend himself because he's got a limb that's broken. Steve, I do want to ask you your thoughts on it. I'll delve into it more, like, behind you. But your thoughts on this fight, it's one of the more, you know, spoken about bouts, especially this being the main event in the UFC. Your thoughts?
I don't know if it was Poirier coming in supremely prepared or McGregor coming in supremely unprepared. That was a really shocking way to begin the fight with that. I didn't even know what a cauliflower hit was until you described it to me. That's a very interesting terminology. I could picture, you know, a cauliflower hitting someone on the side of the head based on your description. Poirier just came into this fight ready to go, and it didn't look like McGregor to me was in the best condition coming into the fight. Again, I don't know how well prepared he was for this particular fight, but Poirier was definitely supremely prepared, and that hit on the leg, you asked if it was the leg or the ankle, or the foot or the ankle, it was both. Literally, I mean, what happened to McGregor kind of reminded me of the kid in the Louisville NCAA tournament game several years ago when he shot a shot from the baseline, came down, broke his leg, and you could literally see the limb coming outside his leg. That's what happened to McGregor kind of reminded me of, and it's just a stunning development, and I think it sent McGregor into retirement without question. I don't know how he recovers from this. Certainly doesn't need to fight anymore. I mean, he's got all the money in the world, and he's very marketable. He's very smart. He's very charismatic. So he's going to, no pun intended, he's going to get back on his feet. But what a stunning way, what a stunning fight this was in terms of its quickness and in terms of the fact that Poirier was just all over McGregor from the very beginning. And when you consider McGregor's motivation that he needed to win this fight, at least make it competitive and go the whole three rounds in the octagon, which wasn't close to even happening, I'm just shocked how this fight actually played out, actually. You can tell by how much difficulty I'm having articulating this. Just an unbelievable display of power by Poirier and how unbelievably ineffective McGregor was against it.
This is very interesting coming from you, especially talking to you in the green room before the show and you saying it here and now. Retirement makes this very interesting. I was not thinking along the lines of retirement. He's 32 years old, so I don't want to say he's fairly young. This is where they start having to watch the fights that they take and how much damage they're going through and a lot of the bouts that they're up there fighting. But considering that retirement situation, because he made a ton of money in that Floyd Mayweather fight. I think it was like $150 or $175 million that he pulled in for that fight alone.
It was Powerball or Super Lotto winnings, you know?
Right. And in turn, he started a whiskey company. So it's like he does have money to, like, fall back on. But the heart of a warrior is, like, what's being tested. And knowing that he's from another country in Ireland, I don't know how much that pushes him to go out there and, like, train and go through his physical therapy and try to get back out there, or if this is something that he's considering to retire. So that is something that I wanted, like, you know, discuss also. And another thing is that I was saying about the weigh-in, and I said I was going to come back to, I know you probably did not see the weigh-in. I'm not big on, like, watching the weigh-ins and the fails, the face-offs and things of that nature. But Conor is always something that you do have to watch. You have to watch him, right? So they do the weigh-in, they do the face-off, and Dana White, who's the commissioner, the guy that runs everything at UFC, he basically has his arms spread wide. Usually they let these guys get nose-to-nose and, like, look at each other because a lot of these guys can be, you know, prepared on what's going to happen. They know that these guys don't like each other. They don't. So he kept them spread as wide as Dana's arms could get them, and Conor still attempts to kick him in the leg with his left foot. Talk about karma. Like, that was the same foot that he, you know, leg-kicked Poirier at the weigh-in, and it's like just watching that happen at the weigh-in, and then the following day that same foot breaks on him in retreat. So that just looking at the rules of karma, like trying to, like, you know, be as patient as you can to make that happen in the ring. And, you know, now retirement may loom. I don't know how serious or severe Conor may take that, but that is an interesting stance, and that's something that we could discuss before we move away from the topic. Your thoughts on that retirement, and also, like, I don't like to ponder her, but the rules of karma and how things could come back.
Well, on one hand, I believe that McGregor doesn't need to fight anymore. Do I believe he should retire? It's a slippery slope because I don't want to tell people what to do, you know, in the media that said, well, it's time for him to retire. He's too old, or whatever the case may be. I think Colin McGregor, and this is not passive, this is dead on, a very, very true thing I'm about to say. He's got to think about his health. He's got to think long term. And if he's thinking long term and he's able to, you know, create, and I'm pretty sure that he is, because again, he's very, very good at marketing, create an income stream for himself to keep himself going and to keep himself productive, then retirement definitely is an option. So he's got to think long term no matter what. He's got to think about his health ultimately. But there is the aspect of, I'm not going out like that. He might be one of those guys. And there's an interesting parallel, TP, in terms of, you see what Tiger Woods is dealing with right now after a major car crash out here on the West Coast. And, you know, and all the talk is Tiger Woods going to be able to recover enough to try to play professional golf anymore? So there's questions about that. It wouldn't surprise me if Colin McGregor does recover from this and decides to give it one more shot. Like, Tiger Woods is probably not going to retire from golf under these particular circumstances because of the old, you know, I'm not going out like that. But both these guys got to think about their health in the long run and understand the fact that they're both not going to worry about money. They've got money for their this lifetime, for their next lifetime, and the lifetime after that. So I believe it's important for both Colin McGregor and Tiger Woods to think about their health and to think long term, because obviously when it comes to their respective professions, what do they have left to prove? And that's pretty much where it's at for me.
And that we just went down a rabbit hole now, because now I'm interested in a Tiger situation, because Tiger's in a sport where, yes, he needs his legs, but he doesn't use them to, like, kick. You know what I mean? And I feel like Tiger could get back out there, even though he had a severe injury also with a car. And I don't know how the severity of the car falling on him, but he was on crutches and having to rebuild himself back. And it's probably more of a year or more time for him to get back out there on the course and be able to play. But looking at Conor's situation, Conor not only has to go through therapy and get himself out there, but that's something that he uses if he's in the MMA situation. If he's boxing, because he fought Floyd Mayweather in a boxing event, then he's just using his hands and, like, trying to situate his legs to get underneath them so he could throw a better punch or a blow. So I think there's still an open door for him in the boxing realm, but in MMA, I know people will try to attack that, and knowing that the second fight that he had with Poirier was kicking at his leg. And it was a weak point for Conor because Conor didn't know how to defend it. So picture people kicking at a leg that has already been broken. So that's one thing that I'm looking at with Conor is nasty and disgusting of a break that is. And you talking about Russ Smith and the situation that happened with Louisville, that's one of them. The other one that I could think of that happened on the floor while I was literally watching that game was Paul George in a Team USA situation. And he went up for a block attempt. He missed the block, and his foot got caught in between the stanchion and the floor, and the rest of his weight came down on the foot or ankle, and that broke. And watching that snap, and that was something that I wanted to, like, kind of discuss, but we can move away from it. But it's like knowing that these guys are women or men. I don't know if it happens to women as frequent as it does happen to men, but we see it because these are more professional athletes that this is happening to, that their bodies may be in a situation where they're already, you know, there may be a hairline fracture already that they don't know. There could be a bone about to break that they're not aware of. Like, so, like, do we need to get x-rays as much as possible to, like, I don't know what people can do to try to prevent this, or what bone structure matter they could take, whether it's, you know, vitamins. I don't know what people can do, but knowing that they don't know what's happening underneath the surface of the body, you know, so it's happening across the board. And we, you know, basketball is one, and this is fighting. I know that we've seen bone breaks as Alex Smith in football with the Washington football team up against the Texans.
And Joe Theismann.
Just to think of the guys that I can think of. So, I mean, if you want to talk about that quickly, and then I'll go in, and it's interesting that I talked about Team USA with Paul George as well.
Joe Theismann was forced into retirement after that leg hit by Joe Montana. He's the one guy that kind of went quietly into that good night.
That was Lawrence Taylor that hit him. That was Lawrence Taylor that hit Joe Theismann.
Yeah, I know. That's why the left tackle became so important. That's why the left tackle became so important in football is after that hit. Obviously, Lawrence Taylor changed how quarterbacks are protected in the NFL after that nasty, nasty hit on Joe Theismann. But Joe Theismann, I believe, retired after that hit. But most of these guys came back. You're right about McGregor possibly taking up boxing and going away from MMA. That is a possibility for him. He can pull it off. But again, he's got to think about his health long term. So hopefully he will be all right as quickly as possible, and then we'll see where he goes from there. It's going to be interesting. But yeah, I would agree with you that I think his MMA days are behind him.
Okay, fair enough. So we'll get into the next topic. And interesting enough, we're going from a bone break to things of that nature. And forgive me if that's nasty, and I apologize how disgusting of the nature of the situation may be. But speaking of Paul George and Team USA, right, has nothing to do with bone breaks or things of that nature, has nothing to do with Paul George. But Team USA gets stunned by Nigeria last night, 90-87, in which, looking at Team Nigeria, I think there is 2 to 3 players that are in the NBA on Team Nigeria. They were coached by Mike Brown, NBA coach, and he's not a head coach now, but he was a former head coach. He's been assistant in several different locations in the NBA, who got high praise after the game with a lot of the coaches being alongside Pop in some of his instances, and also being alongside of Steve Kerr in some instances as well as an assistant. This roster had already given me questionable problems looking at how they were constructed. For them to lose the first game out of the gate is puzzling. But here's something that I am going to say here in Sports City, to see how you feel about it and how you want to address the situation as well. I think this year may be one of those years that the USA loses. I know that we have all of the potential in the world, some of the biggest names around the board. I just don't feel like this team is strong enough to bring back gold. And knowing that these are, you know, more or less qualifying games, if you will, for these guys to be in selected group, I think A, B, or C. I forget how the grouping goes. But for them to have this alarming loss to a team that they should be way better than, I'm not thrilled with what they put out there. I'm not thrilled with, like I said again before, Draymond Green being there, Kevin Love being there. They're relying on guys that have not been here before. LaVine is actually another player that I'm concerned about. Like, I think he plays better in his team spirit or team basketball while he's playing with Chicago. But as playing in Team USA, where he's playing around a bunch of superstars, I think he's more erratic and, like, you know, how could I say, like, more star-struck with the people around him. At the late point of the game, it became the Dame Lillard and Kevin Durant show, like seeing how many threes these guys can launch up. And that's not the way that this is going to get done. And the international game is now caught up with the U.S. Steve, your thoughts on this situation, on how this game went down between Team Nigeria beating Team USA in a close exhibition game?
Well, the NBA players that are on Team Nigeria are Ike Diogu and Al-Farouq Aminu. So there's some NBA talent. There's only got two guys I know on Team Nigeria that are in the NBA. So obviously, I think what it's a matter of is this team was put together by Team USA, mostly because a lot of players decided not to play. LeBron James, Steph Curry, guys like that. You have stars on this team, but going through any kind of a tournament and having success in it is not just about star power, it's about chemistry. And that's my concern with Team USA. I don't think the chemistry is there. I think you make a great point about Zach LaVine in terms of, you know, is he going to be star? Will he be ready for the moment? You're going to need to be ready for the moment on a stage like this. I'm not sure that he will. And I agree with you about Draymond Green and Kevin Love as well. Those two players kind of cancel each other out when you think about it, albeit Draymond Green is a better defensive player than Kevin Love will probably ever be. But the mix of the team overall doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You can throw stars together. That's all very well and good. But, basketball is a sport of coordination, chemistry, and rhythm. And I'm just not – excuse me – if I could catch my voice and get this frog out of my throat, that would help. Ah. At any rate, I just don't like the construction of this roster overall, and it's probably going to show up for them at some point. So I don't want to put too much into losing an exhibition game. Maybe Team USA was holding something back. You know, and an exhibition game is obviously a game that doesn't count towards wins and losses, so it could be a case of that they weren't trying to win the game. They just want to see what they have and kind of work with some see which combinations may work. But I don't like the construction of this roster. I'm not sure that it makes a whole lot of sense, and it would not surprise me if they don't win the gold in the 2021 Olympics in Tokyo.
I look at the situation that this team is going through with them missing free throws, and the way that this team has a whole bunch of shooters around them. Dame Lillard missed a free throw. LaVine missed a free throw and had to miss a second to try to get the ball back. Jason Tatum missed a layup, like not to say by himself, but he basically had baseline nobody attempting to block the shot. He basically had the layup and missed the layup. Like, there's a lot of stuff. Kevin Durant was 2-for-11 going into the fourth. He was having a very off night. Like, this all around, I'm puzzled on how they could put this together. And the eye of the snake, or the head of the snake, however I may mention this, is a guy that I don't want to pick on, but I have to. Coach Popovich is the coach of this team. Coach Popovich, to me, is done. I'm sorry that I have to paint this picture like this. Coach Popovich needs to step away from basketball right now. He's done all that he can in the game, whether it was head coaching the Spurs or being the guy on the sideline for Team USA, whether it was in an assistant form behind Coach K or now running the show with Team USA as of now. You have a guy that has done everything that he can, and I don't want to say he could care less, but it doesn't have the same interest as it once had previously. This is a bad situation. He has a bunch of stars around him. I know he's been here before, but he was as an assistant. I don't know if they get this done. I don't know how Pop pulls these guys together. Everybody knows Pop is an awesome coach, one of the best all time, but I don't think he gets this thing turned around, and I'm curious on which way Pop goes after this Team USA run happens. Even if they do bring back gold, I really feel like he may walk away from the game potentially in the NBA with the Spurs, because the Spurs don't have a lot of talent that he used to have with Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and now he has a ton of talent in Team USA, and people are already kind of giving him the leg up to bring this thing back, and they just lost to Team Nigeria and his former assistant, Mike Brown. So these are things that I'm worried about with Coach Popovich, especially with the players that he does have alongside him.
Well, I think their best starting lineup is, and I say this knowing full well that Devin Booker is on the team, but I think their best starting lineup is, or their best lineup potentially will be Damian Lillard at the point, at the two guard, Bradley Beal, only because I know a lot of people would say Devin Booker reputationally, but reputation doesn't change the fact that Devin Booker is still playing in the NBA Finals right now, whereas Bradley Beal has had quite a bit of time off. So I think Bradley Beal should be starting ahead of Devin Booker once their NBA Finals run ends. Kevin Durant, and then Draymond Green, and then Bam Adebayo at the five. I think that's their best lineup, so I'm pretty sure Papa Vince is going to go to that at some point, or I hope that he does, because in my mind that is their best lineup of guys that are not currently playing in the playoffs and had some rest, you know, and should be ready to go, and then they kind of figure everyone else out. But I think after that starting five, depth and reliability of that depth might be a problem when you get to the games that counts. So it's going to be interesting what happens. If anyone can pull it off, it's Popovich. But again, I think the construction of the roster is a little bit problematic when you consider that Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton, who are right now having lousy finals so far, are going to be guys coming off your bench. And Jason Tatum, ever since he got COVID, he hasn't been right, and I think he needs a standard offseason by Mr. Cover, although I should note that as a Laker fan, I hope Jason Tatum continues to kill himself in the offseason, so fine by me from a Laker fan standpoint. But all joking aside, I think after that starting five, the guys that they bring in behind them are going to be a little bit problematic, especially when you consider a lot of those guys either might not be very healthy or might not be very reliable when it comes to making plays where absolutely necessary, like a Drew Holiday or a Chris Middleton. So we'll see what happens.
Okay, fair enough. We'll get away from this topic as best as possible. I do want to spill into MLB. I know there was discussion that me and you had outside of Sports City and trying to, like, mesh that together, especially while All-Star Weekend is upon us and a lot of these teams making their run toward the first half ending in baseball. I'll let you take over and, you know, set this discussion up on which way you would like to go baseball-wise, and then we'll kind of tune this thing into All-Star Weekend as it approaches.
Well, baseball is desperately trying to seek a young demographic, right? Yet, they don't seem to be very aggressive in terms of marketing star players that are very marketable. Fernando Tatis, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Francisco Lindor, what am I thinking of? Shohei Ohtani. Show out Ohtani, as I'm calling him right now, because he is showing out this season. Why is that? It's a crazy theory I'm about to admit, but consider, put it this way. There's normal, which is expected consistency, and then there's crazy. Things happen when you least expect them. That's basically how I define crazy. And I think baseball, yeah, they should grow the game. That's why I'm there for his job, to grow the game. But you don't want to see the game growing, do you? Why is that? These people aren't dumb. I'm going to assume that they're smart. I know being a multi-billion-dollar corporation has nothing to do with intelligence. There are plenty of people that are not multi-billionaires that are intelligent. I happen to be one of them. TP, you're another one, and a lot of other people. So intelligence is not linked to money. But I think that's part of the problem with Major League Baseball. Not only are they a multi-billion-dollar corporation, despite the fact that they've been known to be incompetent over the years in terms of they react too much to things. You see what's going on with, you know, the dead ball. First the juice ball problem, and then they dead in the ball, and then they changed that in the middle of the year. Now we don't know what the hell it is. It's been a fascinating start to the baseball season, especially when you consider what Shohei Ohtani is doing, what Vladimir Guerrero is doing. He's contending for a triple crown. What Francisco Tatis is doing, what Ronald Acuna is doing, well, prior to the massive leg injury, which is going to keep him out for the rest of the year. Sadly enough, what a talent that is. I hope he comes back strong. But why is it – if baseball is desperately seeking a younger demographic – why aren't they marketing the most marketable players more to attract that demographic? Here's my theory. Because they don't want to empower the players any more than the players already are. We know that, and even though Tony Clark is their executive director, I say this knowing full well that Tony Clark is their executive director and he is not exactly a Donald Fuhrer or a Gene Orza. The players' union in baseball is the most powerful in sports. And I think Major League Baseball owners look at the NBA and how much the NBA empowers players. Major League Baseball owners think, we don't want that because NBA players are way too empowered. You see what's going on with Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers right now, and he seems to be want to dictate, you know, how the Packers conduct their business when it comes to offseason moves and acquisitions. So I think Major League Baseball – I don't think growing the game is as important to Major League Baseball owners as it is to maintain the good old boys network that they build up. I really believe that there's a lot of Major League Baseball owners that have no earthly business owning a baseball team. They're not willing to market these players as much as they should. because they're afraid it will empower players like they are empowered in the NBA, knowing that the Major League Baseball Players Association is the most powerful union in all sports, maybe in the entire country, this side of the Teamsters Union, which obviously no longer exists. So that's my theory as to why baseball is not more aggressive marketing the stars that they should market to attract that younger draft pick, because I think maintaining the good old boys network, maintaining control as much as they possibly can, and not further empowering the players that are very empowered by the union that they have already, is the reason why we see what's going on in Major League Baseball. And I think they're just going to have to learn the hard way. Once their primary fan base, which is an older demographic, continues to die off on them and the younger demographic doesn't come in, because Major League Baseball just doesn't get what's really important and what they need to do to grow this game.
Well, historically and as of, like, the current time of today, baseball has a huge black eye. And they have to, like, figure out how they could put the ice pack or the slab of meat on their eye so they could try to heal the situation. But they're pig-headed enough to not try to heal that situation. They'd rather walk around with that eye being swollen and blackened and could care less on how this looks appealing to the people that are around them. Looking at the era of steroids was probably the best era in baseball. And looking at how their rules go, holding people out of the Hall of Fame for certain situations as such, whether it's the steroid era or, you know, the guy that I've seen in Vegas that my heart bleeds for him, and Pete Rose. Pete Rose should be in the game, and they're holding him out, basically waiting until he passes away to try to give him his just due, when that's just more or less a hidden agenda by a personal scenario. So looking at how this game is trying to lift these players, I don't know how they do it, because the cities that these guys are blowing up in doesn't really have that big of a market. Like, looking at Fernando Tatis Jr., he's in San Diego. San Diego is a wealthy town, but doesn't really have that push of the San Diego Padres. The last time I could really think of a strong push for them was in the late, great Tony Gwynn era. God rest his soul, one of my heroes in the game back then. You're looking at a situation where Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is in Toronto, and they don't have a big market up there in Canada, big city, but, like, doesn't have the same push, i.e. like a Mets or Yankees, or, you know, try to enter a big market team. But these guys are doing it as best as they possibly can, and they're making their storms up in their own region, but it's not being pushed across Major League where they should. Or looking at Ohtani and the way that this guy is going off, to me, I have a whole nother discussion behind him. I think he's incredible, and I think he's in front of a legendary season this year. He can make something happen this season alone. If not, I say in probably the next 2, 3, 4 years, he's going to break something real soon. And I'm talking about record-wise, and I think it could happen this year if he keeps this up. We may be on to a Mark McGwire Sosa year or a Barry Bonds chase. And, i.e., all three of those players that I just mentioned had broken Maris's record, and they are not in the Hall because of the things that they did within their career, whether it was something that we liked or not. This is what baseball is up to. So hopefully, the guys of this year, Tatis Jr., Guerrero Jr., or Ohtani, can stay as clean as possible, stay within the radar, and do everything the right way, because this is going to help the sport as best as possible. But again, there's players across the board that we love that just aren't getting the attention that they need to, and I don't know if it's something that Major League needs to press, or those teams alone need to put, like, more dollars out just to get them, you know, marketed across the board.
Yeah, you remember the Jose Bautista bat flip for the Toronto Blue Jays against the Houston Astros in that postseason game a few years ago? I think that scares the crap out of me. Because, you know, the media coverage, you know, the media makes a big deal out of this, but you can't rule by fear. That's what I think a lot of Major League Baseball owners do. So they have to put their stars front and center like the NBA does. And then actually, interestingly enough, if the owners would embrace their players more, maybe the Players Union would be a little bit more malleable towards, you know, what the owners are trying to accomplish. But it just seems to me in baseball, it's about winning at all costs. Winning the trade, winning the CBA negotiation, winning the games, winning the championships, or, you know, winning the pool of money, that big market teams tend to contribute to small market teams. So everything is a win at all costs. But when you have that mentality, someone's got to lose. And often when those losses occur, they can be very damaging. So the owners need to embrace the players. And maybe if they did a little bit more, you know, the players union would be a little bit more malleable and they could actually collaborate much like they do in the NBA. They could learn a lot from the NBA, actually.
And that's the one bothersome situation of Major League Baseball. They don't want to, like, use a blueprint that's working elsewhere. They want to stick to their guns with the way that it's been for over a century or more, however it pans out, because I think the game's going back into the 1800s, as best as I could think of it. But looking at how they're able to spread, like, the NBA has become global, and knowing that they've been able to get people in Europe or Asia, you know, things of that nature, or looking at the NFL, they spread the game out and having games out there in England and playing in Wembley, and knowing that there's over probably 50 to 100,000 that could fill that stadium, they're trying to take their game global.
Yeah, Mexico City,
you don't really
too.
See the Major League Baseball. Let's say that again. I'm sorry. Say it again.
Yeah, Mexico City, too, with the NFL, so.
Also, yeah, they do also play in Mexico City, too. I forgot about that, especially a lot of the AFC West plays that game down there in Mexico City. That is correct.
Yes.
But you don't really see Major League Baseball doing that. As far as they'll go, they may go to Japan and play a game here or there, probably like every 5-10 years. But they don't really spread the game. They keep it in America when there are players that come from these regions, whether they could go to the Dominican Republic and play a game down there, or playing a game in China, or playing a game in Japan where these players are coming from, and knowing that you have former players that have gone there, let alone a guy that I know, and Bobby Valentine being able to be a manager over there, and they treat him like one of the emperors or whatever out there. So, like, you have a region of people that are interested in the game that you could build up fandom and won't help spread this. You're keeping it in American or USA and locking it in the country, and let alone you're not even helping them here. Like, looking at the Atlanta Braves, like you just spoke of Acuna, and, you know, God be with him on his healing, you know what I'm saying? But these guys have a legit good team that aren't getting the, you know, marketing, if you will, to help them. It's more or less that region or people that know about the Braves that like them outside of the state of Georgia that helps push the agenda that these guys are, you know, worthy of getting into consideration. So I don't know what baseball is going to do. It's a great point that you hit on that other sports are doing it better and trying to grow as best as they can. I don't want to say it's fast because, you know, this stuff takes time. But it's like baseball is behind the eight ball so far, and it's going to take them forever to get away from their pigheadedness to start to get in a better scenario. And just like I mentioned before, they're going to have to start, like, looking at the players that they're holding out from getting their just due and, you know, giving them their credit for what they did for the game. Like, you could think in football or basketball, some people may have had drug abuse previously. Like, I could think of Lawrence Taylor, somebody that's very close to me, Lawrence Taylor. He was in a drug situation. He's in the Hall of Fame. Like, you're not holding out a great from something that he did in his life off the field. It's what he did on the field is what you need to give him credit for. Now, I get it. Steroid may increase a player's power at the plate, but they have to hit the ball too. Like, people could be as jacked as they possibly can, but probably won't get the ball out the park. Jose Canseco got the ball out the park ever so much, but he wasn't no 600 home run hitter. Or you think of, like, Gabe Kepler when he was playing, huge as ever. He didn't have big, gaudy home run numbers. Like, these guys are not in the Hall of Fame, and just so. So, like, these guys have to have talent behind it and do what they can on the field. And this is the sport of baseball, and I wonder how long it lasted, the steroid era. I want to say mid to latter part of the 80s when it became a thing, and definitely through the 90s. But I wonder what baseball does to make this better so people can appreciate it more and help people get up to Cooperstown, New York, like, because that's right around the corner from me. But people don't go there unless their favorite player is getting entered into the hall. They don't get the same attendance like Canton, Ohio does, or Springfield, Massachusetts does. So baseball has a lot to do to fix what they've already messed up.
If you're not growing, you're shrinking. As simple as that. Baseball is shrinking like shrink wrap in terms of popularity, relevancy with the upcoming generations. And they got to fix it, and it's a really simple fix if they would allow it to happen.
Okay, fair enough. So we got that one going. The caller number is 929 877-277-2759. We got at least the next 20 minutes or more left here in Sports City. We may be closing early. Interesting enough, we do have the NBA Finals amongst us. And the series is now 2-0 in favor of the Phoenix Suns, holding court in the state of Arizona. The Milwaukee Bucks have their issues that they have to figure out going back to the state of Wisconsin, in which they call home. I wonder what they can do to figure out what the Suns have been able to do in surviving their onslaught. And yes, the Bucks are, and it's interesting that I'm saying this in reverse, the Bucks are the bigger team coming from the Eastern Conference, and the Suns are coming from the Western Conference and winning more. I don't really want to say that they're playing small ball, but at the position that they're going out there with onto the floor, these players are smaller than what the Milwaukee Bucks are able to do, and they're able to win these games, especially being at home. So at least holding serve, there's a lot of pressure on the Bucks tonight, as it does favor the Bucks to be at home, but it is very close by the measures of the people in that valley in the state of Nevada. Steve, your thoughts on the situation of this game 3 in front of us, but how games 1 and 2 went down in the start of the NBA Finals?
Well, I've got a bold prediction about Game 3. I've got a bold prediction about Game 3. Now, I say this knowing full well that everyone assumes Game 2 and Game 3 are twins. They are not. I made a wager this morning, and the reason why I did it is because it makes sense. I have Milwaukee winning the first quarter. Why? Because they absolutely have to. Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday have taken the shins over the last couple of games. I know when a team has momentum, you're going to ride that horse for as long as possible, but Phoenix is not a horse, and you're not actually riding it. So you have to look at this game much more objectively than trying to confuse Game 2 with Game 3. I don't like it when people try to do their own math. There's only one way to do math, and that's the correct way. Milwaukee absolutely needs to win this game. I don't know if they will, because it's four quarters. But what I'm very sure of is that Milwaukee wins the first quarter because they absolutely need to. And Phoenix, which has been very, very good in the second half, wouldn't surprise me if they have a second half that can pull out this game. But I look for Milwaukee and really make a statement early on their home court, get Chris Middleton to Drew Holiday going, which I think could happen because they play much better home than they do on the road, particularly Chris Middleton. His splits favor his home play more than his road play, Lord knows. And that's where Milwaukee ultimately loses this series, is that they just don't have the chops to win games on the road, and they absolutely have to in order to win this series. So I think that ship has sailed. But playing at home, I like Milwaukee to come out strong, win the first quarter. But it wouldn't surprise me if in that second half the problem for Milwaukee is that they have to play four really good quarters of basketball. Phoenix does not. They're the better team. The better team doesn't have to play a four full quarters of basketball. Phoenix can take their time, see what Milwaukee has got, make the adjustments even make it halftime, because Monty Williams will do that. We don't like bullet holes or won't, but Monty Williams will do that and figure out adjustments at halftime, and they can pull out the game. They don't have to play four great quarters to win this game. To me, Milwaukee does. Therefore, that first quarter I'm looking at is Milwaukee getting a lead early on, getting Drew Holiday and Chris Middleton going as best as possible, and then Giannis continuing to do what he's done because he has been absolutely incredible in this series so far. That's my bold prediction for Game 3, that Milwaukee comes out strong in the first quarter, but don't be surprised if Phoenix, after they make the halftime adjustments you know they're going to make, can pull it out in the second half.
Very interesting. I don't know how to measure that first quarter, because I think the Suns may come out guns a-blazing too. So it ain't like the Suns won't have that on them. I think that, yeah, Milwaukee may hit their first bucket and the crowd goes crazy like they couldn't wait to get them there. And, you know, a lot of people have been attending their Milwaukee Bucks game as they've been away from home, and everybody's been on the streets watching that game from a big TV screen, things of that nature. But, you know, just watching the Suns play fluid as best as possible. They have several possessions where they've let all five guys touch the ball at least twice in a possession to get a score at the end. So this could be something that can actually hurt the Bucks at the end of the day, and knowing that the spread is lower even with them coming home. So there's a lot of stuff to watch. But I do agree, if Milwaukee doesn't come out and set the tone first quarter, This could be an uphill battle for the Bucks to try and win game three. I do not know how this ends up panning out, but the way, like I said, the way that this has been set, definitely through the lines of Las Vegas, it does not look too good for Milwaukee, but Milwaukee should be able to contend to win this game. But I'm concerned with what I've seen thus far. I don't know how much they want out of Giannis Antetokounmpo at this point in time. With him having a 40-plus game and over double-digit rebound, and they still lost by double digits, they need Chris Middleton to at least give them 22 points. I feel like I'm asking for a lot. But he's the all-star on the team outside of Giannis. He does have to put up that kind of night. And Drew Holiday, they signed you for this time, and you are a better guard than Eric Bledsoe, but your defense has actually been helping slow Chris Paul down, but Chris Paul has still been able to have an impact in the game to help the Suns get over the hump. Where do they go to try to slow down Booker and all of the others? And Mikal Bridges is looking like another one of the X factors. And the one guy that does bother me on that floor is Brook Lopez, knowing that he's the biggest guy on the floor and still wants to sit around the perimeter and throw up jump shots. You help people if you miss. I mean, it's a good thing it's a make-or-miss league. But if you're 7 feet throwing up jump shots and everybody's around the perimeter and they have rebounders down there, you're giving them the ball. So there's a lot to be concerned with, especially the way the first two games have gone down in the state of Arizona.
Well, we're going to know, you know, in the first half of the first quarter if Mike Budenholzer made adjustments. I think Brook Lopez goes to the low block like he did against Brooklyn in that game five. I look for that adjustment. But mostly I look for just getting off to a good start, feeding off the home crowd. They're going to be there and they're going to be loud. I mean, you're right. You know, you're right about Phoenix and about Milwaukee ultimately. So, but these playoffs are not linear. I said that on a previous show. These are not linear playoffs. A lot of people are going to say, well, Phoenix has got this because, you know, they just dominated the Bucks in the first two games of this series, at least in the second half. So, which is why I think the second half is where Phoenix strikes. And Milwaukee, you know, needs to show a lot early on in order to build up a lead against this Phoenix Suns team. So that's why I think the first quarter favors them a little bit more between sense of urgency. There's a couple of simple adjustments that can be made. We'll see if Mike Budenholzer actually makes them. And that's why the first half of the first quarter is going to tell you if Mike Budenholzer and the Bucks learn anything from the first two games of the series, particularly game two. We're going to find out. And I put a little wager on that because I'm a big believer that when team has a sense of urgency, they figure out a way to use it to their advantage. That is especially true when you get to this level of the NBA playoffs in the NBA finals. So we will see what happens. It's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
Well, I hope you land this, just to say that, to get that out of the way. But if they lose game three, your thoughts on the Bucks?
Yeah.
And Budenholzer as well.
If you lose game three, especially if you lose it by double digits, then the series is over. Not technically over, but it's I think some team is going to be able to overcome an 0-3 deficit one day. The Red Sox did that against my Yankees back in 2004. But that depends on the makeup and the mindset of the roster. I don't put that Bucks team in the same, you know, stratosphere as that Red Sox team that came back against the Yankees, and I say that with a little bit of frown on my face. So if they lose game three, the series is all but over. It's only a matter of time before the Suns wrap it up. It's just a matter of if they take care of business in game four or they win a championship in front of their home fans in game five. I have them winning this series in five. So, you know, we're right on schedule at this point, it looks like. And I think Mike Budenholzer, you know, comes under fire for an inability to make or an unwillingness to make adjustments. The interesting thing about Mike Budenholzer, let me run this theory by UTP, is that he came from the Greg Popovich coaching tree. So you would think he would understand structure and adjustments coming from a master of structure and adjustments in Greg Popovich. Hence, he's winning five championships, and his team went to the playoffs 20 straight years or whatever it was before they missed the playoffs this year. I mean, think about that. He came from the most structured environment you could hope to come from, and he appears to be the anti-Popovich. Doesn't make adjustments. Doesn't appear to have a structure in place.
that can really bring out the best in the players game by game. It's just interesting. It's almost like he's not trying to be like his – and he can't be exactly like his mentor, but he can take certain things from his mentor, and that is structure and the ability to make adjustments. And Budenholzer appears to be a guy that's just not the least bit interested in that. It's interesting, and it's mind-boggling at the same time. What do you think?
The one thing about it, looking at him, and I know a heavy amount about this with him coming from that Spurs sideline, he's never really had that impact on a team that he's run with. I think the best team that he had was down there in Atlanta, and as soon as he got in Atlanta, they had a 60-plus win season, and then they got ousted.
Right.
And it's like, wait, what are you bringing to the table? And good thing that he did pull that off, winning that series up against Atlanta, because it's like your key card doesn't work down there in Georgia. You got to go up there and fight. Like, hell, they're lucky that injuries happened for Atlanta, because Atlanta was making that pretty interesting of a series, to say the least. So that's something I'm worried about Budenholzer. Budenholzer doesn't really have that stronghold of the team, knowing that the players around him probably, you know, resonate toward him. But I don't think they believe in him. The way that they are losing these games, he's not really making those adjustments to win these games or be like, hey, this is something that we need to respect him on. I don't know if this is the way that they're going to go. I think he saved himself some time as they are in the NBA Finals. I felt like if they'd have lost to Atlanta, he might have lost his job. But this is actually something that saves himself, especially with an MVP caliber player and, you know, defensive player of the year type caliber player also. This actually saves him if he could make something happen. But his next season, which would be the 2021-2022 season, they're going to have to get right back here and win a championship. If they're in front of a game 3-3-0 deficit and the Suns are up 3-0, if they potentially get swept at home, I still will worry about that job. I will still worry about him having his job, especially with the players there and with the Suns having more injuries on the board than they do. They're down without Jarvis, and somebody else just got hurt in the last game too. Torrey Craig just got hurt also. So they're down two players right now. I think they're missing Dante DiVincenzo for the entirety of the playoffs, but they more or less are fighting back with Giannis, and Giannis looks healthy. Even though he had the hyperextended knee, he put up a 40-15-plus game, you know? So, like, I can't really put that on Giannis. I mean, Giannis is doing what he can. So Budenholzer has some questions to answer, to say the least bit.
Yeah, I'm with you. This series is a referendum on Mike Budenholzer and the lack of structure and the unwillingness to make adjustments that need to be made in order to be successful in these NBA playoffs. I think if this series ends for Milwaukee in less than six games, you know, I know it's not very common to fire a head coach and let his team be in the NBA Finals, but the perception on that is going to be, well, did you lead your team to the NBA Finals or did you get there? Because, you know, a lot of other teams in the NBA playoffs were battling key injuries to key personnel like Trae Young for a non on in the Eastern Conference Finals. If he's healthy all the way through, I'm not even sure Milwaukee wins that series to get to the NBA Finals. So I think the perception of how Milwaukee got to the NBA Finals combined with a lack of structure and a lack of structure by Mike Budenholzer and the unwillingness to make adjustments combined with a series that doesn't go at least six games may very well lead to the downfall of Mike Budenholzer. And maybe because next year they could do that and give Milwaukee a chance and Giannis a chance to get back to the NBA Finals sooner rather than later.
And the one thing that makes me think about it is how many coaches are out there that could come to see them and help the team get to where they are right now if they were to lose him.
Carlisle.
So,
he's available.
No, he's not. He's in Indiana. The Pacers took him up.
Oh, that's right. Right. Well, good hire by them.
So he's not available. So, like, again, it'd have to be an interesting name, to say the least bit, and a good one that has championship aspirations, not just to go there and accept the job, to be able to carry a character of Giannis and Drew Holiday being an addition and trying to be able to get Brook Lopez to understand that he's 7'1", and he should be able to go bury guys, especially when he's the biggest player on the floor. That's something that I think they need to get somebody to consider to make him be a big and not be a jump shooter. That's something they have to rattle out.
Make DeAndre Ayton play defense. Make him play defense. Yeah.
Right. Especially with no big man behind him, with Frank the Tank behind him. Hey, what would be more stunning is Frank the Tank couldn't bring a championship there with the University of Wisconsin but be able to try and win one with the Phoenix Suns on the floor of Milwaukee. That would be incredible. That would be incredible.
Could you refer to Frank Kaminsky as a tank if his name wasn't Frank? He is anything but a tank. Are you kidding me?
It's
amazing how he forced these little nicknames on people based on, you know, trying to rhyme based on a first name. He's not a tank.
Well, in college, he was. He got that nickname in college. So in college, he was because he was a big seven-footer. He could shoot threes, and he was playing the post. But he got into the league. He turned into a straight jump shooter, and he did not play the block at all. But when he was in college, he was the tallest guy in the Big Ten. That's why they had to call him the tank.
Yeah.
And now he got into the league. There's a bunch of guys that are his size, and they willingly want to see him shoot a jump shot. If he hits a three, though, and gets going, that's a whole other situation that they have to worry about.
Yeah, that's true. I guess the overall, if you're 7 feet and can play a little basketball, they'll find room for you on an NBA roster.
Oh, you can't teach height. You can't teach height, especially when almost
right,
everybody
yeah.
in college is like
6'8". Yeah.
Like, so you'll get some that are 6'10". You're rarely going to find seven-footers in college. Rarely. So
yeah,
that says a lot in the league. Well, I mean, is there another topic that you'd like to hit on before we start to shut things down? I know we have an early dismissal here today.
You got a topic to end on? You got a topic to end on here? You got a few minutes, so you got a topic to end on here? I appreciate you accommodating my topic ideas. Just want to help the show out. Do you have anything that you want to bring up besides the MMA fight from last night?
The only thing that I could really hit on, and I did want to touch it, and then we will close on this because you're in California, and I'm going to say this. Ohtani?
Yeah.
I think we'll end up breaking Barry Bonds' record. If not this season, it will be coming soon. He is on a complete tear. 73 may be in jeopardy. And I mean to rhyme on purpose, and I didn't do that intentionally. But I think that number is in jeopardy. And Lord knows, I hope they better check him now. Check his urine or whatever they need to do, because I don't want to hear it. He breaks the record, and they be like, oh, he was on steroids. Like, don't do it. Don't do it. Check him now. Get it out the way, because if he does, because he is smashing the baseball, and this is something to see. And the crazy part is the Angels are still not playing good enough baseball to be in postseason play. So we'll see if they could push this thing and have a successful season alongside of what he's been able to do for the Angels.
The Angels have got to be willing to spend money on premium pitching. You know, Artie Moreno runs the Angels like a fantasy baseball team. It pretty much has one. You know, when you have a lineup with Shohei Ohtani, Mike Trout, Anthony Rendon, who isn't playing very well right now, but I imagine he'll pick it up at some point just from the staring guys like that. I mean, they're going to rake, but, you know, you got to spend money on pitching. That might mean going into the luxury tax threshold or, you know, they've got to do something, because if you're going to win in baseball, and this is a lot with a lot of Major League Baseball owners too, aside from fear, and I want to empower the players, is that a lot of them cry poor. But we define poor in this country as making less than $18,000 a year in income. So if $18,000 a year is the mentality that these owners are in, then they're in the wrong sport and they need to be replaced. Artie Moreno has got to spend money on pitching like he does on anything. If he does, the Angels could be consistently contending for World Series year in and year out. But Shohei Ohtani is a revelation. We've never seen anything like this. A DH and a pitcher in the All-Star game. You know, and I think if he's healthy enough, yes, he could break that record. God willing, as you said, he's not on steroids or any PEDs or anything like that. So, but he's got the ability to break that record. I don't know if it happens this year, because I don't think he's on pace for that at this point. Plus, pitching is going to get very – the pitchers are going to get very – they're going to try to evade him as much as possible, like Barry Bonds, and he's going to compile a bunch of walks. So it's going to be difficult, but I think if he stays healthy, yes, it would not surprise me. It's very – 73 home, and does so in the next couple of seasons.
And that's crazy that you say that. They were intentionally walking Barry Bonds, and he still broke that record. And why won't these pitchers walk Ohtani if he's smashing the ball? Why is he getting away with getting the pitches that he wants?
They will eventually, maybe in the second half of the season, you know, when it means a little bit more.
Right. Okay, fair enough. We are at the tail end of the show. I'll let you get up out of here. Give me a plug, close out, anything that you like to promote as we shut it down here at The Brunt.
I want to shout out everyone living life without wearing a mask. I mentioned that on the Grill Out last Wednesday, but I'm going to say it again. Living life without a mask, because Halloween comes about once a year, and it lasts for 24 hours, which doesn't count for a whole year, not even close. Keep living life, enjoy sports, and enjoy everything about life, because if we're not enjoying life, if we're not enjoying life, then we're going in the wrong direction. So keep living and take the mask off, please.
Well, do it as best as you can. Be wise, be safe, do as best as you can. Tomorrow, the NFL free-for-all show will be taking flight. We'll also be back here on Wednesday with the cookout, and Thursday again with the MLB show that we have, the baseball buffet. It's been electric. All-Star Weekend is in front of us. I just got the brand-new Minnesota Twins All-Star cap. I love this hat. Just came to me in the mail this weekend. So I'm on fire with that one. Game three is in front of us with the Phoenix Suns trying to get three games straight out of Milwaukee. Hopefully Milwaukee can actually take the door and slam it in their face and make it a 2-1 situation. But I don't know. Vegas is up to something very wise, and I'm staying away from it. I just want to see it happen and enjoy the game. I love basketball far too much. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chefs again. And if they don't know, now they know.
Sports City Chefs is in the room, cooking up hot topics to put up on your spoon. They well in tune, bloom like a flower in June. Superman verse MF Doom, the clouds loom. So tell a friend it's the Sports City Chefs again. Pay attention, tune in, we on the set again. Sports City Chef. Yeah.
Cabbie. Taj. Woo. Connecticut.